Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Steph Curtis is here with The Five. Hi, nice to have you back.
Happy to be here.
Let's go.
Spinning Silver is a novel that was written by Naomi Novik, and it's a great book to read, but I highly recommend listening to it. The audiobook is read by Lisa Flanagan, and it is about two women who are in a magical centuries-old kind of Russian country, and there's fantastical creatures. And so it's this retelling of fairy tales, and a lot of times they retell them, they're kind of simplistic, but Naomi Novik retells Rumpelstiltskin and some Russian folk tales in ways that add, like, that are feminist, that are moving, and it's epic. It's an epic tale. And then Lisa Flanagan does the reading of all these characters with these wonderful Slavic accents. Fantastic.
So the audiobook version of Spinning Silver.
The audiobook version of Spinning Silver.
Okay.
All right. There's an article called Here's What Happened in the Original Terrible Game of Thrones Pilot That Never Aired. This is on HuffPost. And the final season starts on Sunday.
Right.
And infamously, they had a terrible pilot that when people, they showed it to their friends, like the creators of Game of Thrones, their friends were like, this can't be saved. This is a terrible, terrible thing. And then they buried it, reshot almost 90% of it. But this guy from Huffington Post went to George R.R. Martin's archives in a library where you can go into a special room and just read things that are there in that room. And he found the pilot script. So he writes out what changed between the original pilot and this script, this infamously terrible script. So if you're prepping for Game of Thrones, you got to read
this. So
does
Martin write all the
No, he just happened to own a shooting cop because he had worked with them and collaborated.
Imagine what he thought when he saw the script for the pilot.
Who knows what he thought?
Yeah.
But they apparently thought it would work because they filmed it. It did not work, apparently. I wish I could see that, but you can't. All right. Decoder Ring is a podcast that is written by Willa Paskin. It's at Slate. And what she does is digs into cultural questions like the laugh track. How did the laugh track get invented and how was it used?
Great questions.
But the one that I loved recently is all about Baby Shark. The song, you know, da 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 da, Baby Shark.
Yeah.
Okay. It just hit the charts this year here in the U.S. But she wanted to find out, like, where did this song come from? Who actually wrote it? Because its origins are a mystery. And it's not just, it doesn't just go back years. It could potentially go back decades. Anyway, I didn't think I wanted to know about the origins of Baby Shark, but apparently I did. It is fantastic.
I thought Decoder it came Ring. From some other country.
There's the video of it is a South Korean company that has been putting together, you know, like videos for kids that can play internationally where it can appeal to kids all around the globe. But you can find earlier YouTube versions of people just singing it like at a party. And some guy, like this one guy who's like a childhood entertainer, kids entertainer who had a version. But then the South Korean company refined it and added new details and new twists to it.
Okay.
But there's a version, a German version from the late 90s, apparently.
You know more about like Baby Shark than
I. It is absolutely fantastic. I just love it.
All right.
In honor of Julian Assange being arrested
in London this morning.
He is just a fascinating
Did
character.
Did you see what he looked like when he came out of the embassy? Oh my gosh.
He's got that bushy beard and
kind
everything.
Of the Unabomber look going. But okay.
There's a guy that was working. So Julian Assange had gotten a book contract years ago, but he wasn't going to write the book himself. You know, a lot of people may be able to write short things, but a book is something else entirely. So Sunny Mehta, the esteemed publisher editor, said, you know, why don't you talk to Andrew O'Hagan, this writer? And so Andrew O'Hagan, who's a ghostwriter, went and hung out with him in like some house where he's got all these young women and young men. It was about in 2010 that it was this profile was written. So it's before he was in the Ecuadorian embassy. But Andrew O'Hagan actually got to know Assange. So you really get an idea of why people, because I never understand, like, why do people listen
I know,
to this man?
Yeah.
He's obviously
is he
a fool.
Seen as a yeah. messiah for
yeah.
some people.
And Andrew O'Hagan gets to it. He gets to the appeal of him. And then,
really?
And it's also, he's a great writer. This is what he wrote. He said, a fair reading of the situation might conclude without prejudice that Assange, like an aging movie star, was put out by the global superstardom of Edward Snowden. Assange always cared a little bit too much about the fame and too much about the credit, while real relationships and real action often fade to nothing. Edward Snowden was now the central hub of all interest, and Julian was keen to help him and keen to be seen helping him. So, you know, Edward Snowden at that time was the great unveiler of
yes.
secrets, and Assange wanted to pretend that he was the man actually puppeteering.
You know what
Snowden.
Assange always reminds me of is that Jonathan Franzen novel, Freedom. You
yeah.
remember that element of the novel where there's this mysterious kind of leader and she gets drawn. Anyway,
yes,
yeah.
totally.
To understand that better, maybe
yeah.
a reread
right.
of Freedom. Okay, wait
but
a minute.
You have an event.
I have an experience because I love it when you throw these in, and it's going to be short. I recommend that you come into downtown St. Paul, you go to Legacy Chocolates,
mm-hmm.
and you buy a great fudgy brownie. And then you walk through the Skyway and you look at Nancy Ann Coyne's beautiful exhibit. Have you seen the faces on the Skyway glass?
Yes. If people don't, there are so many people who don't work in downtown St. Paul and never go into the Skyways, and they move me anytime I walk by them.
The exhibit is wonderful. It's old family photos of people from different cultures, and there's a little story next to it about what you're seeing in the photo. And I find myself lingering day after day mm-hmm. to read these stories. So that's my experience. Okay,
that's
music,
great.
Steph.
And Legacy Chocolates, too. Yum, yum.
Yeah.
All right, Vampire Weekend. It has a new album coming out. They already brought out the singles. And it sounds like 1970s Paul Simon to me, and I love.
Good.
And you've got to hear it. This is called This Life.
Thank you, Steph.
I thought it was, 'cause I've never known love like this before. Oh.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.